Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Roleplay Chat. I'm Matt, a game master who can't stop talking about role-playing games. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the use of meta-knowledge and meta-gaming when we play tabletop role-playing games. For the most part, I feel like the terms meta-gaming have a negative connotation associated to them. You know, the gut kind of goes where the gut wants, if you will. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to shed some light on positive uses of metagaming. So in today's conversation, we're going to talk about instances of metagaming in the three different pillars of the game and try to spin some instances where metagaming could be used as a benefit, as an added perk that can help improve the narrative and improve fun at your table. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Roleplay Chat. I'm Matt, a game master who cannot stop talking about role-playing games, and today I have the pleasure of talking to somebody who's not that far away from me, physically right now. It's kind of cool to find talent nearby, fellow Canadian. Today's guest is an actual play voice actor, a professional editor and copywriter with over 10 years of experience in the space. She has worked in product marketing, video game design, fiction writing, and regulatory compliance. Real gambit of things. You may know her from her roles on the Deadlands Crossroads actual play game. Please welcome Farah to Roleplay Chat. Farah, welcome.
Thank you. Also, just a pin. I wasn't actually in Deadlands. I was in Call of Cthulhu. I was in a bunch of other stuff, not in Deadlands.
Oops. Okay, well...
So if you want to re-record that piece, we can splice it.
It's fine. But, the candidness is what people are here for, right? Roleplay chatters.
Perfection.
Yeah, well, welcome, Farah. Despite my clear lack of research, I'm very happy to have you here chatting with me tonight.
I am excited to be here. I love any excuse to talk about games.
Awesome. Great. Well, so Farah, before we get into the meat and potatoes of tonight's conversation, I think, you know, the people listening need to know a little bit more about you. Obviously, I said it wrong. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your experiences in the space, and, your preferred role as it pertains to playing these games where we roll dice and play and eat chips with our friends on a Friday night.
Heck yeah. Well, so I have been playing tabletop role-playing games since probably 2015. I originally got into TTRPGs specifically because I hurt my back and I couldn't do anything fun outside of my house. And so my husband was like, hey, do you want to play D&D? And I went, yeah, that sounds great. And I fell in love. And he got himself a permanent GM for the rest of his life. I was a forever GM for probably the first 6 years, 5 years of my passion of TTRPG. And then I slowly started collecting people and teaching them to DM. And then they became my minions and now run games for me. I didn't start I streamed a bit kind of in the early days. But I didn't really, I don't want to say formally, but like more frequently continued streaming until the last 2 years or so. And I joined up with Crossroads Games about a year ago now, and we're doing some really cool stuff over there. So that's kind of a bit about me. I love telling stories. That's a big part of why I do what I do. Despite today's topic, I am not a giant rules person outside of the rule of cool, but I really enjoy being able to leverage the different ways that people have built their systems and their worlds and their rule sets to be able to help define and play with you know, how people are together, whether they're, you know, human or fae or giant rabbits, I don't care. Like, we're all at our core feelings, and how do we use those rules to play within those confines of
Yeah.
humanity?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I'm a big rule of cool kind of person too, you know, here to tell stories collaboratively with people. The rules help us do that. Not it shouldn't hinder us from doing it. So I agree with you. I'm gonna maybe take some notes on how you manage to get people that you play with to run games for you, because that's been a struggle for me. But that's neither here nor there, so we can maybe do that later.
I'll just hide this podcast from all of my friends that I've gotten to GM. Don't worry about it, guys. You don't have to listen to it. Don't think about how I manipulated you. It's
Wait, so all along you just wanted me to run games for you?
fine. Yes.
That's awesome. So Farah, I think that, you know, you gave a pretty good summary of the kind of game master and player that you are. But to put you really in the hot seat and really get the juices flowing for our conversation tonight, I have some rapid fire questions for you, where I'm going to
Oh, yeah.
force you to pick a side and not explain yourself. You just have to pick a side
All
and run with it. And this is hopefully going to, you know, also continue to help paint a picture of what kind of player you are. So
Awesome.
I'm going to run through them real fast, and then we'll get into the juicy bit of the conversation. Let's start with an easy one. So when you play role-playing games, do you prefer role-playing games that are in a fantasy setting or a sci-fi setting?
Fantasy setting.
When you build a character, a D&D character specifically, do you prefer using the point buy system, the standard array, or rolling dice?
Rolling dice.
Okay.
The dice love me.
When you're playing a role-playing game, do you prefer playing the pillar that you prefer, is it social, combat, or exploration?
Combat?
Didn't you just say you didn't like crunch and rules?
Okay, but like all, I love hitting things really hard, but all of my combat characters, like my barbarian turned out to be the sweetest, most darling thing in the whole world. So
Okay,
like
okay.
combat asterisk.
Okay, that's
I
fair.
like
That's
my
fair.
characters to be awkward as heck, and then they're endearing, but they're not like necessarily high charisma. I
All
don't
right,
min-max.
do you prefer having a short game that is tight and like concise, or a longer game that is a little bit more open-ended and kind of meanders through and has lulls and things like this, valleys and peaks?
Longer game every time.
Okay. And one last one. We'll go with one that's maybe a little bit more controversial. Do you like sandbox games or linear games?
I hate that I have to choose because there's an asterisk in here that I just love talking about. But I'm gonna say sandbox, but we can take that and run
Yeah,
with
well, you know
it
what? Let's say, you know,
later.
we went through those pretty fast. So how about
Yeah.
yeah, you get on your soapbox. Why do you
Okay.
prefer sandbox games? And we'll say all of the things I asked you, and people listening should know this by now, but you know, these were all questions that shouldn't have been binary choices in the first place. I think there's a lot of like spectrum to be had here,
Absolutely.
but yes, o over to you. Over you to explain yourself a little bit there.
Yeah, so I mean, similar, and I'm gonna make this equivalency because I feel like I also need to explain this. When I'm trying to choose between combat and chatty or social and linear and sandbox, like to your point, they don't have to be different. Like my barbarians, my druids, my big hefty boys and girls are always, they're big characters. They can throw a punch, but it's because they're protective and they want to be loving and caring and social and with their people, right? They're like a big dopey dog sort of thing. If we're talking about linear storytelling versus sandbox, I think there is a line to which I'm not going to say railroading because that's such a heavy term, but if I'm working with my players to tell a story and to facilitate that story for them, I want to make sure that I'm giving them some form of guidance to where to go next. My favorite example of this is a game I ran a number of years ago with some friends. And they were all new players. They'd never played D&D before. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to run like one from the, y'all are going to hate me. I can't remember what it's called. It's a book with a bunch of like short one shots in them. And it's a mine and there's an apple. Anyway, so they had to get to town.
The Yawning Portal, maybe?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tales from the Yawning Portal. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like a third level adventure. And I was like, okay, you're dropped out of the portal and you have to go to such and such a town. And they're like, okay. They're walking down the road. There's a sign that says this way to town. And they say, let's go the other direction. And I'm like, I'm sorry. What? So they walk and walk and walk. And I'm like, okay, you walk for like 20 minutes and you see a farm. They're like, okay, great. We're going to go to the farm. They talk to this guy at the farm. And they're like, hey, how do we get to town? And they said, well, my friends, you turn around, walk 20 minutes the way you just came from and follow the sign that says get to town that way. And it was like, you asked, you wanted to do this thing. And so, you know, they had the opportunity to explore the world. They could have gone to that guy and been like, where's the nearest tavern? But they didn't. They asked for the town that they were going to. And so I gave them a sandbox where they could walk around, but also a linear adventure they could follow. Even though it kind of felt ridiculous to be like, turn around. There's a sign. We told you about it. Us in the sky. So, I mean, when it comes down to which one do I like a sandbox asterisk that also has very clear, you don't need to have like yellow exclamation points above all of the NPCs' heads that have stuff, but like somebody has a cool walking stick. I don't know. Start a conversation. You hear someone have a fight, like giving the players a something to latch onto helps them better interact with the world that you're providing for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the other night I was running a game with my, they're not neighbors, but they're basically neighbors. We run a game every other Sunday and, you know, my buddy, he tells me, he goes, hey, you know, I feel like there isn't really like a big urgent thing for us to do next. And I was like, yeah, you're right. There isn't, because you guys wanted to play a game that was very much a game of quests. Like you're part of a guild and you go on these quests and you just kind of do what the guild masters tell you to do. But if you're telling me you want me to put a fire under your, you know, behind, I can make that happen. So it was an interesting conversation where, you know, sometimes, I mean, almost always, players, myself included, don't know what they want. They say they want one thing, and then they turn around and say, oh, wait, but what about the thing that's the total opposite of that? So I totally get you. You know, I think mixing those two things together is the correct answer, if there can be a correct answer, or at least for me, is, you know, personally, that's the correct answer. But awesome, great.
To your point, like, Your table came to you and talked about it. And that's awesome. Like, because that answer is different for every table. Because every table wants a different thing. And that's good. If you were at the same table every single time, you'd get really freaking bored.
Yeah. Or the same table will change what they want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
And
that's perfectly fine. Absolutely perfectly fine. But I think that some things that usually, and here I say this now, perhaps I'll change my mind as we have this conversation, but I feel like usually a table's stance on meta knowledge and metagaming is something that maybe doesn't alter too much, or at the very least should be kind of understood from the very beginning of a campaign, kind of whether that be at a session zero or not. But so I think that, you know, I'm trying to segue us into our conversation about meta knowledge here, where, you know, I think that there's a lot of negativity in the space around metagaming. I think if you say the words metagaming, immediately people have this like gut reaction of like, oh, that's a bad thing. Burn it with fire. Get it out of here. And I kind of wanted to take today's conversation as an opportunity for us to unpack what metagaming is, and then how we can actually use metagaming for good. Let's be, you know, agents of good metagaming, whether that be in social situations or helping us put our character, like putting the skin of our characters on, things like that. So maybe Farah, I'll start you off. I'll throw you this one. And this is something we do on the show all the time, is define our terms. So when we say metagaming, what does that mean to you? And it, based on your experiences.
Absolutely. So when it comes to metagaming, I think it can mean a lot of things. But in this context, speaking of, I, Farah, know an amount about the world of D&D and Faerun. And I know, I pronounce that wrong every time, and Call of Cthulhu and like all these different lores. But my character probably doesn't. If they're just a random farm girl that was living in the middle of nowhere, they have no idea what Nalbar is. You know, if they're a beautiful fair maiden in a tall, tall tower, they don't know what poverty is. You know, like there's, if they're a boxer in upstate New York, they probably don't know what Cthulhu is. They just know how to throw a good punch. So I, Farah, have to remove myself from the knowledge that I have in the real world of these things. And try to put myself in the headspace of that person that doesn't know. And that is experiencing things for the first time or don't understand when they come up in front of them.
Wow, that is super succinct. I love that. That's a fantastic definition. Good job. I agree 1,000,000%. I think that is, you know, you captured it very well. I just to continue to add to this a little bit, I think this can also happen in the confines of the game, right? You can be sitting around a table with people, whether that's virtual or for real, and you can witness things as Matt, I can witness things that my character is not privy to. That can be an interaction between an NPC and another player character. That can be just a description that my game master gives me in like a, you know, as like an abstract view of a space that we've never visited before, just to help set the tone. Mm-hmm. And they're doing that for Matt, not for my character. So I think, to your point, there's the things that basically we know as people, players playing the game, and then there's the things that our characters know. And as soon as we bleed into the character a little bit, that's, I guess, when metagaming is sort of happening. I don't know if you have anything else to add to that.
I would actually add the kind of additional note of when I run games, I do a lot of like free storytelling with my table. So I'll establish relationships. I will walk them through their favorite store and this is what it was like, and like establish the stories that players want to tell a little bit. Not, you know, here's all the beats we're going to hit, but like give me a general guideline of what you're hoping to get. And there can be a line, and this is kind of meta knowledge or even just meta storytelling, if you will, where players will play into the story they want to tell, not the story that's happening. It's like when you're having a fight with someone and they're fighting about something completely different. You're like, what is, we were just talking about the sink that's dirty. Why are you talking about the car? Like, it's that kind of thing where they're reacting to something that maybe has played in their head because they've been thinking about this situation that they're wanting to build, but we haven't quite gotten there yet with the other players or something else.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You're very right. And I think hopefully, I mean, that's not something that I have a whole lot of experience with. So I'm happy for you to share some of that insight with us. Absolutely. So hopefully we can, if I forget, Farah, remind me and we'll make sure we talk about that. So great. I think for the most part, between the two of us and the people listening, we know now what we mean when we say meta knowledge. I mean, I think we probably knew before, but now we're all on the same page. Maybe before we get into kind of our advice and our personal experiences dealing with it in our games, why don't I ask you, Farah, just what your stance is? When you're playing a game, do you have any hard and fast rules where you're like, I hope my players wouldn't do this, I'm going to make it explicit and tell them things, your personal position as it relates to metagaming and meta knowledge in your games?
So I mentioned at the beginning that I'm not a huge rules person. And so I sometimes appreciate when people have knowledge about animal or like beasts or whatever. And they're like, hey, by the way, this thing has this one power you haven't used. And I'm like, oh, great. I can kill you better. Wonderful. But generally speaking, I trust my players. Like if you're playing a random farm boy and you walk into, a den of werewolves, you don't know that a werewolf is killed by a silvered dagger unless you had a reason to learn that because some random traveling storyteller passed by, or you were friends with an adventurer and when you were a kid or something like that, right? Like I have to have trust because I can't erase that knowledge from my players' heads, right? So, if I see a person that is playing at my table, and this honestly has not happened that much. I've been so very blessed with incredible players. But if I saw someone that was like very clearly like, oh, well, this doesn't do that, or like, oh, well, I'm gonna use this type of damage on the beholder because that is gonna work. And I'm like, but would you know that though? How often did your druid encounter a beholder in the wilds? Right? And there are questions there of, okay, give me an intelligence roll to see if you would know that, or give me a, I don't know, maybe I'll change the monster. It's not actually a beholder, my friend. It's a other thing. You just assumed. It's not in like a horrible pull the rug under the player kind of way. But just if it is kind of a common monster like that, I do sometimes just change them up. So if it is a beholder, I will change what the eye stalks do. If it's a werewolf, I'll change what some of their damage does, or how a werewolf fight works, or a vampire, stuff like that. So even in the expectations that they're setting for themselves, understanding that they might screw themselves over by just assuming, because it's not always going to be the same thing.
Yeah, that's fair. And I'm kind of right there with you. I've included conversations about meta knowledge very, very briefly in my session zeros, and maybe I should add them to that conversation. But I think the one thing that really gets me upset, and upset's a strong word, but the thing that I don't appreciate at my table is the meta knowledge that happens when people aren't privy to things in the game, but then interact in like a, in interact in a bizarre way. I had a situation where, my party split up, and some of them were seeking one lead in an investigation, and the other half were seeking a different lead in the investigation. And based off of the intelligence that Group A garnered, Group B was like changing their approach because the first scene had happened, and I had to stop the scene. I had to be like, guys, remember, you're not there. You don't know that that's going on. And I mean, I trust my players. I know they were doing it maliciously, but sometimes it's hard to kind of devoid yourself from having witnessed that. So anyway, to me, that's the line that I draw where I'm like, that's kind of bad metagaming, where you're taking stuff that you wouldn't know. The monsters is another one too. Like I get that. But yeah, go ahead.
No, for sure. It is a challenge because if, and honestly, having so many games digital right now makes that really easy because you just use like the Sneaky Chats Discord channel and then everybody else sits and hangs out in the other one, right? Or like you shoo them out of the room if you're in physical space. But yeah, I mean, I've always run for that particular problem. It's just like, okay, guys, just like you said, you just remind them, like, how do you know that? It's literally happening in real time right now. Like, that's not, you don't see this happening, so you can't know that. Would you? I think that's where I start to get into, again, kind of intelligence checks, insight checks of, okay, if it's something that might make sense for them to infer based on what they're seeing in their own scene, maybe that's an insight check I would allow. But at the same time, like, I don't want them to just be like, oh, we know there's a helicopter coming in 20 minutes because they knew. Well, they don't. You
Yeah,
don't, though.
you
So,
don't know
like, there's definitely a
that.
line between. You can kind of infer that, and no, you do not have a timer in front of you just because they do.
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. Well, so I mean, that kind of covers a little bit about our personal stances, I guess, on metagaming. I think there's a lot of good to be gleaned from it too. So hopefully we can get to that. But why don't we talk a little bit more about the pitfalls of metagaming, or the things that might occur in a game, and let's divide it out into the three pillars of the game, just so that we help keep our thoughts a little organized. So let's start. You talked a little bit about combat. So let's lean in on that. And one example that I think is like the quintessential metagaming example is fighting a troll. I think every single time I've played a game of Dungeons and Dragons where I'm playing with at least one person who's played before, if I pull up a troll, they're like, I'm getting my vial of fire. What's that? Like alchemist's fire. Like going to the store, buying a bunch of alchemist's fire, and I'm getting ready to fight the troll. And it's one of those situations where, you know, the innate weaknesses of a monster, like you were saying, becomes hard to separate out from what a player already knows and what they maybe shouldn't know. I don't know. So in combat, there's that. There's other things like tactics too, that I feel like are one that I don't know. My position on tactics are that I think it's fine that people have tactics. Like, these are veteran fighters. These are like level, whatever it is, experts of their craft. They should know how to do tactics, probably more than we can as people playing this game. So I don't know. How do you feel about tactics in your game like this, where they're meta-knowledging fight combat?
Yeah, strategy? No, for sure. Like, I, when it comes to stuff like intelligence checks and like, if you're playing like a level 20 wizard, they have a giant intelligence and keen eye for puzzle solving that you don't. And so I let people make intelligence checks for that stuff. When it comes to fighting, I have a very similar reaction to that in the opposite direction of, your characters are, like you said, they're experienced fighters. They know what the heck they're going to be doing. They fight together every single day. They probably have already talked about this stuff a million times, but you haven't, because you only play once every 3 weeks. So, like, I allow those conversations at my table. I try not to let their analysis paralysis take over, because then you're sitting there for 20 minutes going, oh, but could we go left instead of going right? What if we put the sneaky person here? What if we put the bow and arrow? Like, no, stop. Make a choice. You have 5 minutes. The Oscars music is going on. Right.
That's a good point.
Because there is that line of, you have to make a decision. You can't just be like, but okay, I'm going to do this if it's going to work. Well, no, you're going to do that or not. I don't know if it's going to work. We're going to see. That's the part of the story that we're telling. That's what the dice have to say. So yeah, that's kind of my take on tactics is, like, I think it's a necessary part, because you're filling in that gap of what your heroes would know inherently, but you only know because you are working through this puzzle together as a table.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I don't know. Are there other quote unquote bad versions of metagaming when it comes to combat that you can think of?
I mean, the stats thing for monsters is a big one for me, because, like,
oh yeah, that's true.
Some people know the hit points of a dragon or of a troll or of a werewolf or whatever, and don't tell my players. But I don't actually have a firm hit point stat for a lot of my monsters, because I don't want that thing where someone, like, does this really badass net 20 thing, and then the bard does, like, 2 points of damage and it dies. Like, that feels really awful, right? So, you know, if they're trying to metagame, okay, well, we've done 18 points of damage to this thing, and now what if the paladin does this many points? And it's like, stop doing math. You're ruining it. You're making it too much about the math and less about telling a cool story, because that's what I want you to do. That's what I brought us here to do together. So, like, having that knowledge that fire kills a troll. Okay, fire kills a lot of stuff. Sure. But then, you know.
And that could be relevant. Like, it could be easily heard or known from a story that, you know, grandma told you when you were going to bed as a kid. You know, you always bring alchemist's fire into the swamp or whatever because of troll. Yeah, I think it's relevant, but you're right. When you start tracking, like, AC, when a player is like, okay, I rolled an 18 and I hit, but you rolled a 16 and missed, so this thing's AC is like a 17 or an 18, and they're like writing on the whiteboard or whatever. that's when the immersion is being broken, right?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely helps speed the game along a little bit when they're like, okay, I rolled an 18. I know that hits. I'm just going to roll damage for you, GM. Don't worry about it. Like, I'm okay with that. It's more when they then sit there with their character sheet and go, okay, I know my statistical chance of hitting with this weapon is going to be less so than this thing because, and then they start doing the math of like why this is the better choice. It's like, okay, but is that what your character would do though? Would they sit there and look at this troll and start doing math about their knife versus their great sword? Like, no, they probably wouldn't. They probably
I
would have
mean,
started with
it
the great sword to begin
depends.
with,
I
but
mean, I'm
yeah,
just playing the devil's advocate
maybe.
here, but
Yeah.
they might swing their sword once, realize it misses, and
Absolutely.
then be like, you know what? This is the better weapon for me now because it didn't hit. I mean, I guess it's very gray, right? I guess is what we're
Yes.
saying is it's very gray.
Yeah.
But when you start, for me personally, when doing that math takes me away from the game, that's when it's an example of bad metagaming. I'm sure there's people listening to this right now who are like, yeah, but that's why I play. And if that's why you play and you're having fun, then it's good metagaming, I guess. Like, don't let me sit here tell you otherwise.
Exactly. I think that's the thing too. Like, there are people that I know and I care very much for that would not enjoy playing in my games because I am so lax on rules. I'm so rules are rules versus cool. Like, story triumphs most of the time. Like, I'm not gonna break the game, but like, I'm gonna get pretty freaking close, right? Like, I'm gonna have fun with it. And there are people that are min-maxers that will go by every single rule in the book. They would hate to play my games because I will just be like, I once gave a bunch of like fourth level players a sphere of annihilation just for funsies to see what would happen. It was hilarious, but boy, they should not have been able to control that thing. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure it created a very fun story to tell
Oh, it was
afterwards.
absolutely. It was fantastic. But if I'd followed the rules and if my players had been reading up on what the Sphere of Annihilation does, they probably would have been like, what are you doing? Why do we have this? Was the choice.
Absolutely. Oh boy. All right. More about bad versions of metagaming. I think, I might actually zoom through this one. Talked about exploration already a little bit, right? Where in my example with my party splitting up into two, doing some investigation work. That was a pitfall where metagaming kind of came and hindered the game a little bit, in my view. Are there other forms of metagaming that might hinder exploration in your mind, Farah?
Yeah, so I have run Curse of Strahd 7 times, something like that. And my husband has played in not all of them, but most of them. And so he is very familiar with Curse of Strahd. Thankfully, he is a good player. And he does not just rely on his knowledge of the entire module that he has played through 5 times. But there are not that many people that I would necessarily run Curse of Strahd for many, many times, or any game in the same world with the same rules and the same storyline. Because once you know what the different areas are, once you know the plot, once you know all these things, it's very hard to remove yourself from that full arc. And so if you're going into kind of prefab stuff, whether that's, D&D prefab, any Call of Cthulhu modules, any kind of, Delta Green, whatever. If you've run before, if you've played it before, it's so important to be able to separate yourself from that previous character. Because like if you're exploring Death House for the first time, spoilers, there are some hidden passageways. There's hidden, I guess that's not really a spoiler, it's called Death House. But there's traps and all sorts of things, right? And if you've played it before, you're like, okay, I know there's a trap there, I know this is here, and whatever. That kind of metagaming would drive me absolutely bonkers. Because like you've never no one has been here before. There's no books about it. There's no way you've read about this anywhere in the world. And so as a player, if you are going into this with full knowledge of what is happening and going to happen, because it's a module, like you're going to run through the module, you have to be aware that the knowledge in your head is not the knowledge that your character is going to have, because there's no way they possibly could, right? And you can't let that influence your decisions of, oh, do we take Irina there? because there's this thing there that's probably going to kill her. Well, you don't know that. It just seems really safe. So it's probably fine. I try
that's
to keep
a
it vague.
Extremely good point. No, but you're 100% right. Like these situations, hidden traps, hidden doorways, secret passages. For me personally, I have a really hard time watching the same movie more than once.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would manage playing in the same module more than once, because you're 100% right. Even outside of like taking a back seat and letting somebody else make the decision, I wouldn't know what to do. Like, I would be like, I guess we'll roll a die to see which direction my character has a preference for. Things like this. Because, yeah, that's a really, really good point. Especially playing in content that you've played before, content that you're familiar with, or even so, we played in a game, it was a while ago now, where I struggled a little bit with this because my game master basically told us this is like a never ending, but like this has been built as a test your luck kind of scenario where, you know, you're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper into this dungeon. And you're not intended to get to the end. You know what I mean? Like he straight up told us that. And knowing that piece of information, I struggled with so much because there was no way for it to not affect my role play, because my character is inquisitive and wanted to find, like, you know, very much like a scholarly type wizard, and would have probably kept going. Maybe to my own demise, but so I really had to shift the way that my character explored that space because of that meta knowledge. It's not exactly the same thing that you were talking about, Farah, where like you know where like the traps are and stuff, but you kind of know that this entire space is a trap.
Yeah,
and if you go too far, you're not coming back out. So I don't know. Definitely something to consider. You have to find your fun in different ways, I guess.
Absolutely, and I think there's something to be said with really, and this is easier said than done, of course, and takes a lot of practice, but there is something to be said about really being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. Like, empathy. Everybody should have empathy. But when you're playing a character, particularly trying to see the world from their perspective of, in the case of your dungeon, I'm just going in a dungeon. I've been in dungeons before, probably. I eventually came back out. Cool. Great. And there is no, you know, there is no question of if you're leaving or not. Now, that's hard as a player, because you might not get that satisfying ending of, and then I returned home with my big bag of gold and I bought the tavern a round of drinks. Like, you might not ever get that. But the fun, at least for me, is in the story that you tell along the way, which is super cheesy now that I say it out loud. But, like, you know, and similar things with character death, right? Like, I've played in exit on death games. I've played in, you know, games where my characters have died or disappeared or whatever. And the story that we told until that moment of death or whatever, that didn't become less impactful. And, you know, and in a lot of ways it became more impactful because death as part of life is like this big epic thing of, we die in the middle of all the things we didn't do, right? And so the same thing is true with characters that we play and fall in love with. And the meta knowledge that they're going to die, I mean, that's not really meta knowledge, is it? Because we all know we're going to die too one day. I did not mean to become so philosophical.
No, but I agree with you. I think that it's all about the story that we're telling. And maybe this can be our segue into talking about how we can use meta knowledge to tell better stories, because, you know, we talked a lot about how meta knowledge can be harmful to the immersion of the game, but I think it can also be used as a boon, as a benefit to us as people sitting around a table playing these games, right? This sharing the intention of our characters with the people that we're playing with, sharing the arc that we're striving towards, and then helping one another achieve that. That's totally metagaming, right? Like, it's totally metagaming to be like, oh, I know that Farah's character really, really wants to meet up with their long-lost sibling, so I'm going to do everything in my power to help them get to that, even though my character maybe doesn't really have the motivations to care about that outside of caring for Farrah's character. But I'm going to still, you know, get some stuff done that would help you get to your objective. So I, anyway, yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, about how we can use meta knowledge to our benefit to tell a better story.
Absolutely. I think a really good example of this is an actual play podcast the listeners probably know of, where a bunch of nerdy ass voice actors, et cetera, sit around a table. Beauregard. Beauregard was not a likable character in the beginning, particularly, but because they had like trust at the table, and because they, I can only assume based on their interviews and the books that I've read and whatever, had a sense of the story that they were going to tell, even if it wasn't like plot, it was vibe. There was building towards something. There was personal evolution. And I have the same thing in my games, right? I'm running a game right now where multiple characters, all of my players, I get them all to do kind of like mini sessions with me ahead of time and with each other. And these two characters, there's like romantic tension. One of them is aware of it outside of game, or sorry, aware of it. Yeah, aware of it outside of game, unaware of it inside of game. And there is still no definitive, we don't know what we're going to do about it yet, but there's definitely that tension there. And the fact that there is an awareness helps really underscore like that reaction. So like, if I walked up to you on the street and said hi and started a conversation, you'd have very different vibes if I was like flirting with you. And that's particularly true in person versus like online, because online, like, you can see my hands move because I gesture a lot, or you can see my facial expression, but you can't see my body language. You can't see how close I might get to you physically, right? Versus in real life or inside the world of the game, inside your meta, your mental image of the moment, how gently does she touch his back? How close does he lean in when they have a conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have that meta knowledge of how these relationships have evolved over time and how these characters react to certain things, like, I jump from loud noises. So if someone knew that and a loud noise went off, they'd probably instinctively think, oh, she jerked back from something, right? We can build off of those meta knowledge items to create these more dynamic conversations in game, because you're reacting not just to the words being said, but to kind of that vibe you understand is currently in existence. You know that she's leaning in. You know that he's kind of standoffish, right? But you don't have to say it every single time because you already know. You don't have to infer. And I think that is so valuable when it comes to like building those social interactions of, we have kind of like the combat, right? These people have been fighting together for weeks or months or whatever, and they get a sense of how your partner moves when they're fighting, so you know how to swing to get a hit in. If you've been traveling with someone for 6 months, you know their weird quirks. You know that they hang their socks beside the fire, and they know it pisses you right off, right? And that's kind of that push and pull you don't necessarily get in role play, even really good role play. But if you have that meta knowledge, that's kind of a really good foundation that you can build all of that off of, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And I really like how you brought it back to the combat situation, where you're right, these people, they're traveling days and weeks and months together. Sometimes one game night session will be like 10 days worth of travel time. How can you possibly expect two people, three people who are role-playing a four-minute scene together to be able to capture all the nuance of a relationship that continues to exist over the course of such a long period of time? And sometimes, I would say most times, is a far stronger and better relationship. Maybe not better, but definitely a stronger relationship between those characters and the two people that are actually playing the game together. Mm-hmm. So 100%, being able to have like a baseline, like a, I'm mad at you right now, meta, like our characters are, I'm mad at your character right now. You don't have to know. You can play off that and and pretend you don't understand. And, you know, it becomes like this game within the game of taking that piece of information and using that to help educate the way that you role play, and maybe even help you build logical steps to the realization of that thing. Like we were talking about the character where one of them has a crush on the other one or whatever. That's super cool because the person who is being crushed on can take some time to think about how they're going to handle that situation and play it out properly in game and like to the most dramatic, entertaining effect, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And then they start to question, like, did they hand me that thing because they like me or because they're just nice and that's their job? Like, and then you get these fun little conversations where they both know above table that some stuff is happening, that there's some feelings happening. But on the table, it's like, I'm a clueless person. I don't know that this person likes me. We've been traveling together for like 6 months and we've just been buddies. Like, you're being weird. Why are you being weird? And like, you really get to play with that stuff when you know, and you're able to really get that understanding out of the way before you sit down to actually have those attractions.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think, so this has happened to me in a different context, but I find that meta-knowledge can be really helpful, especially when you're playing a character whose stats are, like, not you as a person, right? If you're playing a character who's, like, far more charismatic than you, or far more intelligent, or even just far less intelligent, or far more wise, whatever, any kind of discrepancy... The only advantage you have as a player, really, in this context, is the meta knowledge that you can kind of lean on to try and replicate the personality that you're trying to be. I was playing in like a 2-shot, 3-shot adventure where I was playing this ogre type character. He was like very, very dumb, very, very kind, but very, very dumb. And his like main motivation for everything was food. And it was interesting because I was given this character because I asked to play a character. Like, I was like, I've been having a really hard time at work. I don't want to think too hard about anything. Please give me somebody that I don't have to worry about. But then the opposite thing happened where I'd find myself in situations where I was like, okay, I'm playing this character who is this, like, you know, he has virtually no motivations other than keeping his friends safe and eating lots of food. How do I do that in an interesting way that's not disruptive, that's not gonna like break the narrative of the game in like a bad way? So I ended up having to come up with these like extremely creative reasons for the way or the reason he would even take on certain missions or go and fight certain people, and like to justify it to myself and to justify it to the party was like a mental exercise within itself, which was a lot of fun, but I needed meta knowledge to be able to do that because otherwise you kind of get this like chaos happening at the table that wouldn't have been fun for anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a character that I'm playing in a 3-shot over at Live from the Apocalypse. Her name is Roxy and she's a wrestler and she is dumb as rocks and I love her. I also hate her because she's awful in the best way and I like to think I'm nice, but she is not. And so I keep reminding myself, okay, this person is very selfish, this person has these relationships that already exist. I've already had conversations with the person that's playing my brother and the person that's playing my dad about like, these are the things that we're going to talk about in our next game and this is why I'm going to cry. And like setting those expectations of what I'm already getting her accent, setting those expectations for how my dumb as rocks wrestling girl, I know nothing about wrestling except for what I learned from like watching the Netflix show Glow, is she would be super passionate about this stuff. This is the only thing that she's smart about. Oh God, how do I do this? And so, you know, being able to, God, what is the quote? In a convocation speech, Neil Gaiman said something to the effect of, if you don't know how to do something, pretend you are a person who does, and then do that. Do what you think that that person would do. And I've applied that so heavily to TTRPGs. I'm not an archaeologist. I have never been trapped in a time warp anything, but by gosh darn it, I played Delta Green like I stole it. I don't know. with that in mind, like, my character is a woman from the 1800s who finds herself in the 2020s and who has never seen, like, a modern car or a cell phone or, like, electric lights almost. And it's like, how do I translate? And again, that was a big meta knowledge problem for me, actually.
Yeah,
there's a great one of myself and two other PCs were sitting in a hotel room. We were all from, like, the 1930s, 1920s-ish. And we're all like, what is this? What is this, like, bathroom situation? What is this picture box? What is this loud ringing thing beside the bed? Like, there were so many, you know, of these out of time moments that we got to play with. And that meta knowledge of what I know of the world today versus what a woman from 1880 would have known. Whew, wiping that from my brain, that was a whole thing. But
yeah, that sounds like it'd be very challenging.
Yeah, having to be like, okay, person, I need you to teach me how to pay for anything because I don't know what a credit card is. I don't know what ID I need. Do I need ID? We could just, you know, if you could reach the bar, you could drink. I don't understand. Right? And just stuff like that informs, kind of going back to what you're talking about, how you describe what your character is doing. Because, like, if you're sitting in a hotel room and you've never seen a TV before, you've never seen a TV guide before, you've never seen a phone book, you've never seen a telephone, what do you do in that room with this little stick that if you press enough buttons, noise happens? Or you go out into the world to buy something and you're like, wait, why does no one have, like, paper money anymore? What? A chocolate bar costs $3? That was, like, a day's wage back in the day. Like, all those aha moments, being able to bring that meta knowledge into what you're doing and then apply it and stuff like that can be really satisfying to world building and character building.
That sounds super cool. And what I really love about that too is, like, you know that. So you can think about those moments. You can think about what kind of role play scenes would have the maximum effect to illustrate this concept of completely being, you know, out of your element in a new space. Mm-hmm. And how do you do it in an interesting way, right? You don't want to always do it the same way because then it doesn't feel as interesting. I had a situation where, again, I was playing in this one shot and I was playing this character who was just scared. We were playing a game of 10 Candles not too long ago. And one of the, like, my character's major flaw was that they were just scared. They were just always scared all the time. And knowing that, to me, technically, is, like, it's meta knowledge. It's my character's flaw. How can I portray that fear in a variety of different ways that isn't just going to be, like, cowering behind somebody else or jumping away and turning around and running? Like, that doesn't really add anything to this situation. So instead, maybe my fear would push somebody else into the, like, you know, in one situation, I volunteered somebody else to do something. And obviously I had to have that conversation afterwards, be like, I hope you were okay with me doing that. But I thought it pushed the story forward in an interesting way. So yeah, absolutely. Taking that meta knowledge and applying it in a way that, like, almost like planning it out, and people might kind of cringe to me saying that. And I'm not saying, you know, it's formulaic or it's predetermined, but you're at the very least giving yourself options so that the role play scene or the interaction that you're having with the NPC is, like, optimized to have the biggest most interesting impact that propels the narrative forward, I think.
For sure. I mean, as a GM, understanding where my players' heads are at and what they're going to react to is technically meta knowledge. But it's so important for me to know what they want to do so I can give them the experience they have. On the other hand, as a player, so in a Call of Cthulhu game recently that I was in, I got, you know, a level of madness. And I talked with my GM about it, and we were like, okay, well, let's apply PTSD. Great. I have experience, personal experience with PTSD. So yeah. I can apply how I felt. However, I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound a little weird, but stick with me. There are parts of PTSD and the way I experienced it that would be good for storytelling and others that would be less good for storytelling. And in creating a story at a table, kind of to your point, you don't want to just be hiding in a corner, right? You want to be able to bring out the parts of that that are contributing to the overall narrative while still being true to the character and how they are experiencing the world. And so one of the beauties of storytelling and doing so in a safe space at a table with people that you trust is being able to explore those pieces of that that you're able to leverage in ways that will both help yourself as a player to, you know, extend the story, but also help the table, whether that's establishing relationships together so that other people have an opportunity to kind of interact with you when mm-hmm. you're having those symptoms, or at the very least, giving them opportunities to react to a situation that you've caused. So like a game last night that I played, I got my bout of madness and I was trying to break a window open with a chair. And it wasn't really helping the situation, but it wasn't hurting the situation. but we still applied it to helping in a certain way. And so like little things like that of taking what you know about the thing that you're trying to do and how your party is also going to react, because again, you've been traveling with these people for however long mm-hmm. you've been traveling with them. You'll be able to kind of feed their story while still really leaning into yours, I think, with that.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. And I like how you say feed their story, right? Because we are here building a narrative together. And mm-hmm. I think there are times where I think one of the hardest but also most rewarding parts about playing a tabletop role-playing game for me personally is learning the balance of being gift-giving and like sharing spotlight. Yeah. I find that to be so intricate, and this is a dance that changes with every group that you play. But yeah. One thing that's, I think, critical to doing it right is harnessing our meta knowledge of what's going mm-hmm. on. If we know, like there was, I'll help illustrate this with an example where there was a time in a game that I played with some of my close friends a while ago, and it was in a Warhammer game, where we were interacting with this character who we all kind of suspected was secretly the father of another character in the game. So as a table, we were all fabricating ways to have these two characters interact with one another. So we were using our meta knowledge of the situation to prop up this situation and have that kind of that conflict occur. I think the same thing can be said for any kind of character objective, or you know, when you're completing a story arc that's relevant to a specific character, it kind of becomes everyone's responsibility to help make that happen and you know, not steal the thunder of the person whose like main story arc is about to get completed or climax is about to happen or whatever.
Well, if you think about the biggest caveat of any tabletop role playing game, four strangers meet in a tavern. What do you do if nobody wants to meet each other? What do you do if nobody wants to go on an adventure together? If the game is over, I am not splitting the party four ways from the very beginning. I'm just not. I refuse. And so, like, that is a kind of meta knowledge that you four characters, or you, whatever, how many characters, built characters to play together. So we need to make a reason that you are putting up with each other, even though this person chews funny and this one puts an unreasonable amount of salt in their food, right? Like, you really have to just, you're starting off with meta knowledge, right? And I actually had a game recently that we recorded where one of our characters is exceptionally shy, like will not talk to anybody shy. And so my character, the perky little, you know, chatty Kathy, went and sat down next to them and just started talking. And that gift of, we don't want you to sit there and be quiet the first 2 hours of this game. We want to include you, so I'm going to make you uncomfortable. And we're going to have that conversation because, gosh darn it, I'm friendly and I want to talk to you. And, but knowing that, in a meta sense, you're part of the party because you are a player character. There were probably a half a dozen people on the place that we were that weren't talking. But my character did not pick those characters to talk to. They picked the player character. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think that's a really great example of how we can leverage meta knowledge to feed the story rather than just sort of, oh, well, they're not talking. I'm just gonna sit over here and awkwardly sit on the bus and just, like, read a book.
Yeah.
That's boring.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or even just, you know, even at the very basic level, like you were saying, of sharing that spotlight, right? Giving that person an opportunity, like, here, look, I'm shining the spotlight on you now. You have no choice but to do something. I think it's a blessing. And if everyone's doing it to everybody else, then you never have to do it for yourself. And that's kind of the beauty of it, is always being the person setting up the assist. So yeah, absolutely. I think meta knowledge is critical to being able to do that. So definitely something that people need to harness. One thing that I did want to talk about, though, is that, and this is something that I firmly believe in, one of the objectives, I think, one of the roles of a player at a table, after you get past the, like, critical elements of being a respectful player, kind play, like all of, you know, trusting, honest, open, all that stuff, I think one of the big roles and responsibilities of a player is to be immersed, to do everything that they can in their power to engage in the space and immerse themselves in their character. So one thing that I think meta knowledge does is it does the opposite, right? It definitely takes you out of character to a certain degree. So I wanted to ask you, Farah, how you felt, you know, we can overcome that as a player or as a game master when we think about using meta knowledge or meta gaming. It feels like it's at odds with this immersion tenet of being a role player. So how do those things mesh together? How do you make them coexist in your games?
I think the biggest way is by offering a space where people can ask questions. Like, there have been times as a player when I'm like, I know this thing about vampires, but I don't know if my character would, so do you mind if I roll for it? And I allow my players to do the same thing. They can ask those questions. They can challenge whether or not they would know a thing, right? And at a point, you have to be obviously respectful about it. Like, if your GM says, no, there's no way you could possibly know about this, okay. And then if you really are having a hard time and you're like, I don't know what to do because I can't get the knowledge out of my head, give yourself some options and roll a dice. Like, we're playing games with dice. Let the universe decide, right? Like, there's, even if you yourself feel that you are trapped in your own knowledge, there are ways to be able to kind of get around those sort of things. So I think for me, like I said, it really just comes down to be respectful of the story that you're trying to tell. And ask the questions that you think are relevant. If you, even being aware of the fact that you think your metagaming is super valuable, because, like, yeah, like, I know a lot about vampires. I don't want to I don't want my farm girls to necessarily know about vampires, but I can't remove the fact that I know that vampires have pointy teeth and don't like garlic. So how do I play around that? Yeah. Simple answer for but like I think yeah, it just comes down to ask questions, be respectful, and if all else fails, roll some dice.
Yeah, that's fair. I really like that advice, actually, because that's something I do as a game master all the time. When my players ask me something about a character and they're like, oh, and they ask a question about like the weakness of a monster, or they ask a question about where that character was, if maybe they know something about the murder that happened or what have you. 9 times out of 10, I roll a D100. And the closer I get to 100, the closer the character is going to be to having an answer that, makes some narrative sense. So I think that that's perfectly valid advice.
We had a game recently where we were in a car, and the question came up of, does this car have a moonroof? And our GM just rolled. He's like, yep, it has a moonroof. Because we don't, I didn't plan that. She didn't plan that. But, sometimes players ask questions, and you're just like, oh, okay. Highs or lows, my friend, let's go.
And sometimes I find it actually quite fun to do that out in the open. There was a time when my players asked me, I forget exactly what it was, but it had to do with they were about to get like a property that they were going to use as a home base, and they had all these questions for the person who was giving them the property. And I was like, I don't want to come up with this right now. Like, I don't think it's going to be the best answer, but I'll try. So I'm like, I rolled a D100, and I'm like, if I get anything under an 80, this character has no idea. They're just like pushing the paperwork over to you. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. That's what you're getting. And I rolled it out in the open, and I got a 95. And I had to come up with but I feel like that kind of laid the foundation for my response, because the players understood that I was like stuck here improvising some kind of creation myth for this abandoned tower that they were going to be getting as a home base. So it almost helped manage their expectations for how like relevant my response was going to be, in a fun way. I know, I mean, I know rolling op out in the open is maybe a hot take for some people, but I think it's fun.
So do I. I think here's my favorite piece of meta knowledge, and I apologize to all GMs for saying this out loud. We are making a lot of stuff up. Just so much stuff. I make up so much stuff. Even when I prep, even if I have the module that is pre-written in front of me, I am still making up so much stuff because it's impossible for me as a human being to do literally anything else and also plan for every single eventuality that a player is going to make. Because it's just impossible. And so even that knowledge that feeds then into respect and patience at the table is always a good piece, right? Because if you ask your GM a question like, tell me how many windows this new wizard tower has, and they take a hot second to answer, and you're like, do you not know? No, I do not. I'm literally drawing the blueprints on the back of my napkin right now. Don't look at me. Right? Like,
Exactly.
it's all
What
made up, guys.
like the sun, what room has the most sun in the afternoon?
Oh my God.
Oh, I don't know, man. Just pick a room. That'll be the one with the most sun.
Exactly. Yeah, like
Yeah,
the best kind of
absolutely.
knowledge. We
Absolutely.
just make it all up. That's the fun.
But you did touch on something there, Farah, about preparation. And I don't know if these two topics necessarily collide in the best way possible, but when you're preparing for your games as a game master, what kind of, I don't even know if this question makes sense. What kind of meta knowledge do you factor in? Do you ever expect your players to have meta information, and does that kind of inform the way you prepare a game at all?
So this is a very interesting question because I'm currently writing a game and I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but I'm basing it off of the system called Lacuna. It's one of my favorite systems because it relies heavily on dream logic. And
I
that is all I'm
don't
going to say
know
about it.
I've
It's
ever heard of
so
that.
good. I love it. It's the book is like half a centimeter thick, if that. But before I run that game, I explicitly tell my players, if you have never read the book before, if you've never looked at it before, don't look at it because I want you to go in blind because that's kind of part of the fun. But the one that I'm running for a channel that I'm writing is heavily based off of works of fiction. And it assumes the knowledge of those works of fiction by the players.
Interesting.
And so I explicitly asked all my players, like, what are some books that you like so that they would have that knowledge there. But if I just chose at random books, it wouldn't have made any sense. So like that kind of meta knowledge can be really fun to play with because you're relying on them to be like, oh, why did you ask me about that? Do I need to know about that? Right. And again, it depends on the kind of story you're trying to tell. It depends on how you want your players to engage with the world, but being able to provide those hooks for those players is so fun. Like, even just little things, like one of the players in a Curse of Strahd game I'm running right now is running a different game for me, and so I'm going to be sprinkling little references from that other game that don't mean anything within the context of Strahd, but like, hey, you remember that rat with a person face? Happy birthday, it's a rat.
That's cool.
Like little scary things that I can drop in and doesn't mean anything to their player or to the character, but the player is like, oh, you remembered. So yeah, I definitely for on different levels depending on the game do rely on what my characters know about the world because if they didn't, it wouldn't work.
Absolutely. I really like the Easter eggs. That's cool. And I think we can't forget, right, that at the end of the day, we're playing this game or we're running this game for other people. Like the intention is for them to have fun. And sometimes, it's fun to see a character come into the world that they had forgotten about, or to name
Absolutely.
a character something absolutely like some stupid pun or whatever. I remember in my pirate campaign, the chef of the boat was named Rordon Gamsey, and like he just was always cooking like raw fish all the time, and everybody would always tell him that it was raw, and that was like this like running gag that we always, it's like repeated over and over and over again, and that was like meta, like that wasn't for storytelling, that was for the people playing the game with me at 100%. So I think we can't forget that we're playing with other
Absolutely.
people.
Yeah, like I had a friend, or I had a game I was in recent, like a little while ago, where a friend of mine and I did Zartan and Anje, so Tarzan and Jane.
Nice.
And we didn't tell the other players what we were doing. We just showed up as Zartan and Anje. And eventually they started noticing it. One by one, we'd get messages of, how dare you? I'm like, Tarzan and Jane was not a story in the world that we were playing in, but gosh darn it, it was in this world. And everyone was
Yeah,
like,
that's
how
awesome.
dare you with that joke? Get out of here.
I love that. I love that. Outside of like, bad puns, is there any preparation that you do from the player's side? Like if you're a player going into a game, I know there's stuff that I do, so I'll pitch it over to you first. Is there any kind of thinking, meta gaming that you're doing in a positive way before a game starts, or maybe before a campaign starts, to help you be immersed in that game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one game that I'm currently in the process of prepping for is based in Russia after World War II, And it has been a hot minute since high school. So I'm doing a lot of research about Russia post World War II. And the character I mentioned earlier who was from the late 1800s. I don't know what it was like for a female archaeologist in the late 1800s. I did a lot of research on that too. There's a Delta Green game that I'll be playing in soon, and I could not tell you anything to do about being a spy. Right, other than like watching James Bond and shows like that. So I think there is, as a player, a lot we can do, whether it's just consuming media that is of that genre, right? Like I watched a lot of CLO before the wrestling game that I am in right now, and because I'd never really done anything to do with wrestling, I never watched it, I never listened to it, whatever. And so I was like, I need to know about ladies wrestling in the 1980s. Come on, Netflix, let's go.
Yeah, give
Right?
me something.
And yeah, and being able to, at the very least, provide myself some context of what the world was kind of like, at the very least, gives me that, how do I interact with adults or men or women or people, and how do relationships work? How does the technology function? Because my itty bitty cell phone that fits in my pocket is not a brick, right? I could not put that in my pocket. So how did people communicate? At what point did cars start having windshield wipers? Because that's a thing that
Yeah,
didn't
oh my
happen right
gosh.
away. Or seat belts. Like, what is this? Why do I have to put a thing around my stomach while we drive? And really understanding what that world in life is. And it's harder when it comes to fantasy, I find, because like I can do all the research I want about all of these different things in the world. They exist. But when it comes to fantasy, because there is, or sci-fi, because there's such a big broad range of possibility, as a player, asking questions of your GM is so important. Because if you're like, well, I feel like my character would do this, this, and this, but if you're in a fantasy world of their own design, particularly, how do you know that's possible? Right? So being able to go to your GM and be like, hey, listen, do dragons, talk to me about dragons. Do dragons exist? Would I have heard of a dragon? Because I really want a dragon mark, but like, I don't know if dragons are a thing. And being able to have those conversations and that meta knowledge is providing you a basis upon which to build your character and how that character has developed in the world that exists that you're standing in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's really talking to your game master is never a bad thing. So yeah, I agree with you 100% there. I would even add, like, this might sound kind of redundant, but I think note taking as a player and like task, like giving yourselves something that I do is I will give myself tasks. Like I'll say, next game, based off of what I just witnessed, I'm going to ask that character something. Like, even if it's super meta, I'm not part of an interaction where I see two player characters talk about their siblings or be really, really upset at one another. I'm going to write down a little note, put like a little to-do list, go and talk to one of those characters and ask them how they're feeling because I've noticed that they've been super grumpy lately. And that's super meta because I wasn't privy to that conversation. But like we said before, you're spending every waking minute of your day with these people. You're gonna notice that they're grumpy, even if they don't say that they're, that they're a certain way, or that you're gonna notice that they just had a fight. So keeping track of certain interactions that I might want to do later, I think is a lot of fun and can be can help enhance that role play. Something else that I like to do is just jot down objectives. So like this is something I should probably do in my personal life too, but I don't. Is yeah, jot down like what my character wants to do right now in the short term, and then maybe like a long term objective, and then having those things there, I think really help be my North Star when it comes to situations that I might not, you know, really know how to deal with. Well, at the very least, I can think of my North Star and say, okay, how can I kind of use that to point me towards this North Star that I'm trying to get?
Mm-hmm.
And then sharing those objectives with other people is super important.
Yeah. I have a home game where I'm a player where we have a Miro board that we all contribute to.
Oh, neat.
Which is super handy because we have these are the items that we have to collect, and these are the people we have to talk to. This is our task list, whatever. And this is less of a social personal thing, but more of just a, oh my God, guys, please, for the love of God, as your GM, keep organized at the very least a little bit so that you know. Because, like, I've been guilty of this as a player too, if I'm just not feeling it, I'll be honest. But, like, usually I try to have what my character wants to do in kind of a literal sense. And if you have those conversations offline, if you have those conversations in a document, in a Miro board, whatever, and you're all agreed, or at least semi in alignment, being able to just be like, okay, these are the four items we have to collect. Roll a dice if we can't decide. 1, 2, 3, 4, go. Okay, we're going that way. Can really help speed the story along if you're not just sitting there for 2 hours being like, okay, well, we had this conversation and like, I don't know if we did this. Did we do this already? Who did we talk to? And it can just get really tedious. Even as a player, it can get really tedious if you're just sitting there like analysis paralysis of, well, our characters probably would have remembered all of these things because this was literally 2 hours ago, but for us it was 2 weeks. And that's kind of the other side of that meta conversation, right? Of they are existing in the world at that moment. We are existing in 2 weeks.
Splotches. Yeah, like intervals of time.
Yeah.
And usually like 3 hour chunks where you're like 2 hours in and you're looking at your watch and you're like, we haven't done anything and it's been 2 hours.
Yeah, like your characters probably don't have a Miro board, but your characters are also like walking down the street immediately after you interrogated that person. So like, you know, they probably remember what they want to ask next.
Yeah, they don't need one.
Yeah, they don't need one, exactly. So, you know, that's just a administrative meta, which I think is absolutely so valuable.
I think anything that people can do like this, like you're saying, Farah, that helps remember, helps immersion, facilitates conversations, facilitates the narrative being pushed forward. These are all examples of meta that are good. And it's fun to think of how many ways it can be used in a positive light, as opposed to just the like, oh, you are tracking the HP of this monster, or you're breaking the game because you remembered a module or you looked up a module beforehand. Like, you know, all of these things that are basically cheating, for lack of a better word, is basically cheating. So I think, there's a lot of great opportunities for metagaming. I'm looking at the clock and I think we've been talking about this for a pretty long time. So I'm sure we could keep going. But what I will do is I'll pitch this back to you, Farah, to see if there's any kind of parting words or thoughts that I didn't, you know, steer the conversation towards as it relates to meta knowledge or metagaming that you wanted to talk about. Like, this is your chance to talk about anything related to this. And then we kind of do the wrap up.
I think my closing remarks, if you will, is that metagaming is not all bad. I don't think it's possible to say there are things that are all bad, but like in terms of storytelling, as long as your table is respectful and collaborative, any level of it can be right, quote unquote. But a big, big part of that is everybody being on the same page about what right looks like. Mm-hmm. And so as you are building your characters, as you are telling those stories together, maintaining that openness and curiosity and excitement for, I understand this as I, myself, as a player, and what does my player, or what does my character know? And what does your character know? Because like, if I don't tell your character a thing, They don't know. Maybe go tell them. And let that be an opportunity for storytelling. So I think that's my Coles notes, is just make it fun. Don't use it as a, there's, you can't win D&D. You can't win TTRPGs. Like, half the fun of Cthulhu is dying in an awful, awful, horrible way, right? Like, that's, you're going to get slaughtered. You're going to get horrible things happening. But like, if you want to tell a linear story where you know all the rules, and you know all the story beats, and you know all the baddies, go play a video game. Like, you're not... It, let yourself be curious, let yourself have fun, and let yourself make mistakes.
Exactly, and see where those mistakes take you. And I think, yeah, like we said, metagaming can and should have a place at the table to facilitate that, right? To facilitate you playing somebody that... You don't know. You don't know what it's like to be a boxer in the early 1900s. You don't know what it's like to be a PI in the late 1800s. But facing off against demonic creatures of the old great one. So yes, I agree with you 100%, Farah. I think that metagaming definitely has its place at the table, and so long as you agree on what should be avoided and what shouldn't be, I think people listening hopefully can take something away from this conversation and apply it to their games. So with that, I wanted to thank you, Farah, for being here to talk about metagaming and storytelling and all that great stuff. I'm really looking forward to our conversation at Can Games. This probably going to be happening before this airs. So
excellent. So hello from the future.
Hello, exactly. Or, from the future. I don't know if I'm gonna find a way to record our conversation in Can Games. That might just be us talking to people at the convention and that's it. So for those of you listening, I hope I find a way to record us talking. But if I don't, know that it was a fantastic conversation and you
so good. Out. Oh my goodness. I had such a good time.
Yeah, best conversation ever. Would have made amazing podcast content, I guess. But so thank you again for doing this and chatting with me. Before we say goodbye, why don't you let folks know where they can find you, where they can watch you in all of your amazing performances and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So as we mentioned, my name is Farah Sarkaya. I am on all of the socials as at Farahkaya, FARRAHKAYA. We'll see if Twitter is still up when this airs. Who can say? You will also find me primarily on Crossroads Games. We are mostly on YouTube, but also, again, Twitter and all of the other socials. You will also find me on 12 Sided Stories, Live from the Apocalypse, a whole bunch of other channels. But if you want to see where I'm going to be next, my website is always a great choice as well. It's just sarkaya.ca. I'm going to plug Delta Green. I'm going to plug The Looking Glass, Spokane's Bounty Hunters, Kids on Bikes, Hellbound. We've got a lot of really cool content coming your way from Crossroads Games and others. And I'm excited to see what's coming next, where we are when this comes out.
That's so cool. Yeah. And then Crossroads Games, you know, you guys are doing a lot of really cool stuff. So I'm really looking forward and rooting for all of your performances and all of your shows. So definitely, folks listening, go check it out. I'll have all of Farah's links in the description of today's podcast. So you can go and click the show more button and see all of that good stuff. If you want. Yeah. My pleasure. If you wanted to reach out to me, you can always do that. It's role_play_chat on all socials. Or if you don't want to be limited by some arbitrary character limit or something like that, you can reach out to me. That's contact@roleplaychat@gmail.com. A friendly reminder to spread the good word of Roleplay Chat wherever you're listening, to your friends, to your table, and to anybody who likes to roll dice and play games. And again, Farah, thank you for being here. This was an awesome conversation. I'm super glad we got the chance to do this.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And with that, let's call it a chat. And as always, I'd like to thank Alex and Chase over at Pocket Bard for the use of their music in the intro and outro of today's episode.